Robinhood bietet Ihnen Zugang zum US-Aktienmarkt. Sie können Krypto zu niedrigen Kosten kaufen und verkaufen. Alles an einem Ort. Auf Robinhood. Investment- und Kryptowertedienstleistungen für EU-Kunden werden von der Robinhood Europe UAB angeboten, die von der Zentralbank Litauens als Finanzmakler und Kryptowertedienstleister zugelassen ist und deren Aufsicht unterliegt. Termingeschäfte auf US-Aktien und ETF-Token bergen ein erhebliches Risiko und sind nicht für alle Anleger geeignet. Bitte überlegen Sie sich sorgfältig, ob Investments in derartige Finanzinstrumente mit Blick auf Ihre Erfahrung, Risikotoleranz und Finanzlage für Sie geeignet sind. Beachten Sie die geltenden Beschränkungen und Zulassungsvoraussetzungen.
All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers? What the fuck buddies? What the fuck nicks? What the fuck wads? What's happening? I'm Mark Maron. This is my podcast, WTF. Welcome to it. If you sense a slight differentiation in the sound, I gotta hammer shit out because I'm back in the garage. I'm back in it. I'm back. I'm here. I'm in the new studio after we had all the work done because the city came down on me, man. Some of you know the trials and tribulations of a guy who bought a house with a garage that was already set up to record in, and then only to find that moments after he bought the house, it was tagged by the city and he had to make it into an apartment. I'm sitting in it. And it sounds pretty great in here. It's pretty cozy. I'm very excited about it, actually. I have a new lease on life for some reason. I don't know why. Things aren't getting any better in the world, but for some reason, moving into the new place here, the new studio with the new rug, new floors, new door, all the walls have sound insulation in them, double-paned windows. I got sound curtains on a couple of the windows. I got my panels that Julian, the kid Julian, built. He came over. I'm going to resolve a little bit of bounce in here, but all in all, exciting. And also, I can make hot tea right here. People can go to the bathroom right out here. I could cook them fucking dinner in this place. And they could shower if necessary. So if there are anybody out there, any of you celebrities or people that might be interesting, wrong way to put that, people who I've talked about wanting to talk to, you know who you are. If you listen, if it's any sort of a perk, you can shower here. I'll have towels. There's a full shower. You can cook here. If you want to bring over some meat, we can cook it in the kitchen here at the studio. A lot of options now. A great refrigerator. Things, it's a whole different ballgame here. I got closet space. If you want to store some stuff upstairs, you know who I'm talking to. I'm talking to you, Albert Brooks. If you want to come over and shower and have something to eat and make it yourself, I'll cook it for you. We can do it all right here in this structure. Pretty exciting, isn't it? I would like to say this, though. I don't do many podcasts, but I did this kid, Rick Glassman. I don't know if you know him. He's a comedian, young guy. He was also on the show Undateable with D'Elia and Funches. He asked me to be on his podcast. I did not know what to expect. Did not know there was a video element. Did not know it was goofy and weird. I should have assumed as much. But I decided to do the podcast. It's called Take Your Shoes Off, and you can listen to it wherever you get your podcasts, or you can watch it on YouTube. You can get it through, I think, rickglassman.com. But it's a rare opportunity to see me pretty goofy, and I had a good time, and I did goofy shit, and I liked the kid. But that's as far as I'm going to go. I have problems with him, which is one of the reasons I went on his show, but it was fun. And I don't say that too often. There's something wrong with me? Am I going down what's going on? Is this the beginning of it? Also, live shows. Dean and I have a very good time on the road with or without you. So you can come or you don't have to, but we're going to have a pretty good time anyways. But Orlando, Florida, I'm at the Hard Rock Live on February 14th, Valentine's Day. I will do some love material. I will talk about love in a way that'll make you happier with the person you're with. Then in the next night, I'll be at Tampa, Florida, at the Straz, man. We're going to the Straz Center on February 15th. Portland, Maine, at the State Theater, February 20th. Providence, Rhode Island, at Columbus Theater, February 21st. New Haven, Connecticut, at College Street Music Hall, February 22nd, and Huntington, New York, at the Paramount, February 23rd. You can go to WTFpod.com/tour for links to all the venues. By the way, did I mention Dan Levy is on the show, not Daniel Levy? All right? It's not the guy from Schitt's Creek. It's not Eugene Levy's son. This is Daniel Levy. His parents are different than them. And I like this guy. I like this kid. Another kid I like. I guess I'm at that age where I can say I like this kid. Right? I can. Fuck it. I knew Dan Levy when he was a comic. Still, he's not much of a comic now, but he's the creator and executive producer of the new NBC comedy series, Indebted. The series premieres. It's tonight it premieres. February 6th.
I'm sorry. I don't have that information.
I didn't ask you for any information. Why does it just do that? Did I say something that would make Siri want to talk to me? What information do you have? Hello? All right. Yeah, tonight his show premieres. That's it's February 6th. Yeah, it's tonight, 9:30, 8:30 Central. So not Daniel Levy. It's Dan Levy. That's got to be a fucking problem, right? Maybe it was insensitive of me to tweet when it was announced that Rush Limbaugh had stage 4 cancer, for me to tweet the human cancer got cancer. Maybe it was insensitive. It was funny to certain people. It was dark and insensitive and cruel. Much like Rush Limbaugh. Hey, folks, my neck hurts. Let's read some emails, can we? This one, subject line, finding your roots versus State of the Union. Dear Mark, it's February 5th, the morning after the State of the Union, and I wanted to share this with you. My wife and I debated whether or not to watch the State of the Union. We are not fans of this POTUS, and his lies and mistruths make us squirm, but we also felt it the duty as an American to watch the speech. And then it hit us, why not watch something else that will inspire us and call to our, as the President Obama would say, better angels? So we pulled up your episode of Finding Your Roots. We love the series and find the guests' reactions to their history fascinating and compelling. Watching the roots of you, Terry Gross, and Jeff Goldblum unfold made me think, what better example of America is there than the complicated story of immigration? It is the thread that weaves our national fabric together. It is our shared experiences, the highs and lows, that holds us together despite our often deep-seated differences in ideology, which is why the current disparagement of immigrants and refugees is so saddening and disappointing. Imagine having risked everything to come here, the last land of hope and opportunity, only to be shunned and bullied by the current administration. Having seen the recaps of the State of the Union address, I feel we made the right choice. Enjoy all of your work. A fan, Dirk, in Nashville. Thanks for reaching out, Dirk, and I think you made the right choice as opposed to watching that professional wrestling like shit show in the fucking Congress, huh? Right there in the Capitol. Just the greatest heel of all time. Healing it up. Man. Here's another one. Waiting for the Punch, my new Bible. Hey, Mark and Brendan, I've been a listener and fan since I was in high school. Your conversations on the podcast and your stand-up have helped me push through and navigate the fucked up trips that come with being a depressed brown kid in L.A. with more addictions. And he'd like to admit I'm working on it. I got Waiting for the Punch when it was first released, plowed through it in one weekend and put it on a shelf. The book has since moved with me from place to place and most recently found a home on my work desk in Austin, Texas. Today was a particularly rough day, and before leaning into some bad habits, I decided to pick up the book. I don't know why. Haven't done this since the first read. Something compelled me to pick it up and flip to a random page. I landed in the addiction chapter on an excerpt from Rob Delaney. What a guy. In that moment, I was able to get a taste of the warmth and clarity that the podcast consistently offers, a reminder that I'm not alone, a reminder to be kinder to others and myself, a reminder that it's going to be okay. I know I'm a little late, but I just wanted to say thank you to you and Brendan. The book is incredible. I plan to keep using it as a tool for healing, the way I assume people use the Bible or those positive affirmations books, as I continue on the path to a better, healthier me. I think this approach to the book could help others too, so feel free to share. Viva Boomer Elmer. Yes, Waiting for the Punch is available in paperback. Sometimes I get hardbacks I sell signed, but see, it is helpful. It helped me. Every one of the fucking conversations I've had on this show have helped me in some way, have made me a more empathetic, wiser, smarter, happier person. And I'm glad that that comes through. I'm glad that that you guys feel that. So this Dan Levy guy, Dan Levy, the guy I talked to today, I never disliked him, but he always kind of had this, you know, kind of a precious haircut and kind of dressed kind of alt-y, emo-y. You know, his comedy was okay. He was always sort of around in the periphery. But I never had anything against him, and I never really knew him that well. But I always knew of him, and I always ran into him, and he's always been sort of over there. He's younger than me. But then I heard he kind of made a show, and I thought to myself, good for that fucking kid. I could, you know, it's like these guys who kind of transitioned into writing and, you know, made a nice living for themselves, started families like normal fucking people. God bless them. And I don't even believe in God, but I want God to bless them. I'm proud of them. I'm happy for these youngsters that get out there and figure out how to have a responsible full life in fucking show business. Good for them. God damn it. And this Levy fella, he's one of them. So right now, let us talk to Dan Levy, not Daniel Levy from Schitt's Creek, but Daniel Levy, the creator and executive producer of the new NBC comedy series, Indebted, which premieres tonight, February 6th at 9:30 p.m., 8:30 Central. This is me and Dan.
Robinhood bietet Ihnen Zugang zum US-Aktienmarkt. Sie können Krypto zu niedrigen Kosten kaufen und verkaufen. Alles an einem Ort. Auf Robinhood. Investment- und Kryptowertedienstleistungen für EU-Kunden werden von der Robinhood Europe UAB angeboten, die von der Zentralbank Litauens als Finanzmakler und Kryptowertedienstleister zugelassen ist und deren Aufsicht unterliegt. Termingeschäfte auf US-Aktien und ETF-Token bergen ein erhebliches Risiko und sind nicht für alle Anleger geeignet. Bitte überlegen Sie sich sorgfältig, ob Investments in derartige Finanzinstrumente mit Blick auf Ihre Erfahrung, Risikotoleranz und Finanzlage für Sie geeignet sind. Beachten Sie die geltenden Beschränkungen und Zulassungsvoraussetzungen.
You have an issue with your name.
Yes.
It's a problem, buddy.
Yeah.
So you're not Daniel Levy.
No, I'm not Daniel Levy. I'm Dan Levy.
Levy.
My dad isn't Eugene Levy. My dad is Elliot Levy.
Totally different.
Very different.
Same spelling of the last name.
Same spelling. American. I'm American. He's Canadian. And yeah, but my dad was not.
Yeah, he's not Eugene Levy.
No, he's not.
The famous Canadian comedic actor.
No, he's.
You're not Daniel Levy, the creator of Schitt's Creek, who acts in the show with his father.
Yes. No. I am Dan Levy.
Levy. Son of Elliot Levy, who does what?
I'm a comedian, and I created Indebted.
Yes.
The new show on NBC.
Right. But
yes.
Your father does what?
My father is a traveling salesman, so he sells like...
He's still a traveling salesman?
Yeah. He's hoping to retire soon, but yeah, he's been in sales his whole life.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So very different.
Very different people.
So in order to find out about you, you sort of have to do like Dan Levy...
Yeah, you got to go.
Comedian.
Through. Yes. Dan Levy, comedian. Then you can find me.
Oh, you're Levy. I got to remember that.
Yeah.
But you're not Levi. Levy.
No.
Levy is the Canadian Levy's.
Right. And then I guess there was just like some guy named Dan Levy who was nominated for an Oscar. He's a composer. I was like, all right.
Not that guy either.
No, not that guy.
Well, you got one of those Jewish last names that it's been around a while.
I know. I should have just had I should have been like Dan Rivers or something when I was at Dick Doherty's Comedy Vault.
Dick Doherty, you're insecure. That's your problem.
Yeah.
You're another good-looking kid who does comedy.
Keep falling. Stop falling. That's all I did at Dick Doherty's Comedy Vault. I would just fall on the stage to the point where I had to go to the hospital because I had a giant bruise that was growing up my arm. And I was like, is something wrong with me? And they're like, what have you been doing lately? And I was like, I do this tequila joke where I fall on the floor and get up and fall again. And they're like, stop doing that.
So wait, how do you... It's like the old joke.
Yeah.
Doc, it hurts when I do this.
Yeah, stop doing it. Yeah, exactly.
But wait a minute. So where'd you grow up?
I grew up in Stamford, Connecticut.
But I have memories of you. I mean, like, I knew you.
Yes. No, my first memory of you was at the Gershwin Hotel
Oh my god!
And it was an open mic
when they had that show there.
Yes, and you were peering in through the window.
Really?
Yes, and because I think you were just dating Misha. I think it was like the beginning.
Misha. Yeah, yeah. Oh, right. So
that was the beginning, I think. And I remember seeing you and being like, "Oh, there's Marc Maron. I'm gonna go talk to him." And I was like, "Hey!" And clearly, you were not interested in talking to a 20-year-old comedian.
And that would happen.
And I was like, "What's going on?" You're like, "Nothing. This show looks good." I was like, "Yeah, I love your comedy." You're like, "I'm performing at Caroline's." I was like, "Cool." And then you gave me your email. You're like, "You can come." And I was like, "All right, cool."
Really?
Then I emailed you, and then I came, and you didn't talk to me afterwards. I'm like, "I guess we're not gonna be friends."
That was the story?
That was the story.
Well, you had the Beatles haircut, John Lennon mid-period haircut.
Right, yeah. I went through a lot of... Well, I think in the beginning, my first look in stand-up was this giant, crazy spiked hair. Like, I had giant spikes, and then I went to the swoop.
Oh, yeah, right.
Yeah, and then I think... Yeah,
and then you had that sort of hipster Beatles-y looking
thing. Yeah, yeah. All terrible.
But so, wait, so was Mishna on the show with you?
Yeah, yeah.
So that was the deal? That was why I was over there?
Yeah, and I thought you were just, like, wanting to hang out with some... cool comics, and I was wrong.
So that was probably, when we were sneaking around.
Maybe, yeah. Maybe that's what I was. Maybe I was just messing up your whole sneaking situation. I was like, "Hey, there's Marc Maron."
I think that might have been like because we were kind of on the down low because there was an issue. We were both in a relationship with people, and I think that was one of those things where she's like, you know, when you're doing the bad thing like that, you're like, "Well, where can I see you?" And she's like, "Well, I'm going to be out of like any sort of opportunity you had to see each other outside of the relationships you're in, as opposed to just do the right thing and get out of those."
Yeah, you're like, "I'll just go. I'll be
hang out. I'll see you at the, and I'll say hi." And
no one will say anything. And I'm like, "There's Marc Maron."
And you're like, "Oh fuck, this kid's blowing my cover." I don't know. Well, but yeah, but I remember seeing you around a lot. So you grew up in Stanford. How many like brothers and sisters?
I have one brother.
What's that guy do? Does he have a different father named Eugene?
Yeah, yeah, that's it. No, he's actually an agent. He's in New York, and he's like works with comedy and writers in New York.
Really?
So yeah.
What's that guy's name?
Jonathan Levy.
Huh.
Not Levy. Jonathan Levy.
And your mom was were they married?
Yeah, they were married, and they were just like, you know, classic, very, you know, Jewish, super Jewish. My mom's like crazy obsessed with me, sort of thing.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Like, from the very beginning?
From the very beginning.
Always been obsessed with you.
Yeah, completely. Like,
and still obsessed with you?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
And your dad's just out selling things?
Yeah, my dad's just like on the road. So like when I was first doing...
Really?
Yeah, it was a crazy life. And like when I first started doing the road, like the colleges was the first thing I got into. And I remember my dad was like, let me look at your schedule.
I'm going to meet you. Really?
Yeah, he would meet me in airports and stuff. And
really?
Go, yeah, oh yeah. And
what did he sell?
Well,
what does a traveling salesman sell?
Well, in the height of the career, he was like selling the Magic Bullet, which was that blender.
Come on!
Oh yeah, swear to God. So he would like
go to malls.
He'd go to supermarkets.
Supermarket and stand there.
No, not stand there. He'd go in the back and be like, "You want to buy 7,000?"
Oh, so he's selling to retailers. He's not out there like doing the demonstration.
No, not demonstration. They're not his ideas, or else it would have been a different life for me. Mm-hmm. but yeah, so he would do that, and then he would look at my schedule when I was like starting touring, you know, and he'd be like, "This is insane. You can't go like you cannot be in like Long Island and then go to Florida and then go to Rhode Island. Like this doesn't make sense." And I was like, "Dad, you don't get it. Okay, this is like paying my dues."
Yeah,
and then I remember I was in the mall.
Paying your dues.
I was paying my dues. And I remember I was in the mall like in Providence, you know, on that, and the Neon Entertainment, the college agency, called me and they're like, start screaming at me. You know, I was like, "I do not represent your fucking father." And I was like, "What?"
Yeah.
And I was like, "What happened?" He's like, "Your dad just called me and said that I don't know how to book colleges and he's going to send me a fucking map." I was like, "Dad, what the hell are you doing?" And he's like, "I don't understand what you're doing. That guy's an idiot. I want to book your shows." And I was like, "No, this is a nightmare."
He's going to manage you?
Yeah. He wanted to be in charge of my schedule.
Oh my God, which college agent was that? That's memorable.
That was, it was Neon Entertainment. Hmm. It was, I could go to NACA, stand, shake hands, and just do a bunch of colleges, yeah.
But your dad stepped in.
My dad stepped in.
And then the guy called you and was freaking out.
Yeah, they did that all the time. I remember I wanted...
Neon did?
Yeah, Neon.
They'd call you and yell at you?
They'd be like, "What's going on? Like, why is your dad forwarding me, like, you know..."
Oh, your dad kept doing it.
Yeah, my dad kept doing it. And then I was like, "You got to stop because you don't understand. Like, this isn't sales. This is like comedy. Like, it's going to be terrible. And I have to like drive to, you know, Jamestown, New York and bomb and then come back."
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Hold on, I'm gonna finish my smoothie.
All right, do it.
Do you drink smoothies?
Yeah, I like smoothies.
Do you drink with protein powder?
Yeah, I mean, I go back and forth. I just hate making them. It's like
that's the best part, making them.
Really?
You don't like them? Do you have a Vitamix?
No, I have a magic bullet. I have an old magic bullet.
You gotta get a Vitamix.
Yeah, I guess I should.
You have an old magic bullet. Old nostalgia for you?
No,
this is what put me through college.
No, it's just. I don't like cleaning the smoothies, so I just like go to a place. You know,
I just don't know what's in protein powder. Like it seems like it's mysterious. And if I think about it, I'm like, I get it's vegetarian, it's vegetable protein. I believe the label. But what do we know about them?
We don't. I'm sure it's bad for everything ends up being like in like 2 years, like, oh, if anyone ate whey protein, you now have cancer. Like, God damn it.
Oh, God. Is that true?
I hope not.
I'm not vaping. I know that. All right, so you're growing up. When did you start doing the comedy? Let's stay with your father. So okay. You had... Because I'm curious about that. So you had magic bullets at home?
In the beginning, yeah. I mean, there was like periods. Like he was, you know, my dad actually wanted to be in show business. He came here in like 1978 or something.
To L.A.?
To L.A. It was here.
Elliot Levy did?
Elliot Levy came out here in 1978 and was like, I want to be in show business. And
what was his plan?
He didn't have a plan.
And acting? Singing?
Like producing.
He's going to produce.
He was just going to show up with a suitcase and be like, I'm ready to produce. Even though, like, in 1978, it kind of seemed that easy.
Yeah, it might have been. That was the transition.
Yeah, and then he was here for 6 months, and then, like, my family was like, you got to come back to New York and sell belts. What are you doing in L.A.?
Sell belts?
Yeah.
Wait, so your grandparents were in the belt business?
My uncle was.
Your uncle was in the belt business?
Yeah.
He was, like, in the fashion district?
Exactly.
Oh. Yeah. Knockoff belts,
all that stuff. So then, yeah. So then he had no choice because he didn't have any money or anything. So they moved back. They moved.
So your father was this wayward brother who yeah. was sort of like, you know, the dreamer.
Yeah, kind of.
And your grandfather was in the fashion business.
Yeah, my uncle was. Yeah, so they just.
But how did he get in? How'd your uncle get in? This is your dad's brother?
No, it's my dad. It's my mom's sister's brother.
His husband.
Husband, sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So it's like second, it's once removed.
Yeah.
So your dad's really like, it was a problem if your mom, his wife's sister's brother is there. Like there's concern throughout the family. He's got kids.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And he ran to L.A.
No, it was, well, he didn't have kids yet. He was about to have a kid.
In 78.
So, yeah.
How old was he? In his 20s?
Yeah. And I was born in 81. So then they came back to Stanford because that's where they lived. And
he took your mother out there?
Yeah. Yeah. She
to
met
to L.A.
Yeah. For like 6 months,
they lived. But they met in the East Coast.
Yeah, they met at sleepaway camp.
And you're at sleepaway camp.
Yeah, they've been together since they're 15.
That's crazy.
It's insane.
So yeah. Your mom's father's in the fashion business. No one's in the fashion business.
No,
but your mom's sister's husband.
Yeah, was in the knockoff, like you know,
the knockoff
belts.
Belt business. Yeah,
exactly. It's very impressive.
So your dad, he gives up his vague production dream.
Yeah, and he's like, all right, I guess.
What, does he have any stories from out here?
I mean, I guess they lived on, where'd they live? Like, they lived off, like, Sunset and La Brea.
But was he just out of college or something? What was the, like, what did he do before that?
No, nothing. This was what he always wanted to do. He got married, and they're like, he's like, I'm going to go to L.A., I'm going to do this. And he came to L.A., he met one guy, this guy Steve, who's like a second A.D. That was his connection. That was my connection. When I moved to L.A., he's like, call Steve. And I met Steve, and he was a second A.D. And he was like, this is very hard. And I was like, okay, thanks. And that was it.
Steve.
Yeah.
Do you still talk to him?
I don't. He wasn't. There was one time where I was making like a web series for Comedy Central and I called him to like help me.
Yeah.
And my budget was like $3,000. Yeah. And I sent him the script and he's like, I looked it over. I'm going to need $300,000 and you're going to need 30 days. And I was like, all right, Steve, I'm literally never going to talk to you again.
So how did your dad know Steve?
I guess he had a job when he first got here and he just met him there. I don't know what the job was.
Really?
I don't know. But
so
it
he didn't come out here completely blind.
Yeah, he just...
he had one job.
Yeah, one
but
job.
You don't know what the job was.
Not what the job was.
It was in show business.
It was in show business, yeah. And then he like, you know, went back just not wanting to go back, but they went back and then he started working in belts and, you know, this whole business and
in New York
in the 80s. And then that was good. And then like he basically realized that
he made a lot of money.
I think he made okay money in the beginning.
But your mother's sister's brother probably made some money, huh?
I think so.
You don't know? It seemed like a big time for knockoff C80s.
It did, but it didn't seem... I mean, no, it didn't seem that way based on everyone's lifestyle, to be honest. I mean,
like,
I don't know.
Growing up, you didn't think, like, you didn't go over to that guy's house and go, like, holy shit.
Yeah.
No one lived on Long Island?
No one lived on Long Island. They were just, like, in Connecticut, and it was, it was fine.
All right.
And then, And then I think at one point, like, my dad was like, I don't want to do this, and then try to, like, get into, like... you know, just random Connecticut production work. And I was like...
What?
Yeah.
How old are you?
I was probably like 12.
And he just wanted, like, he's like, is there a film shooting here?
he basically was like, I'm going to try to like do production. And I was 12 and I know what he was talking about. I was like, okay. And then that was him just basically not working for a decade. And then...
Okay.
And then...
So is your mom working?
Yeah, my mom was in like education. So my mom was, you know, running a...
That's vague. What?
She worked for Head Start.
Oh, okay.
And then, so she did that pretty much the whole time. As my dad sort of figured out that he was mad that he wasn't in LA and he left. And then he got it back into sales like later in the 90s.
So after the decade of production, local production.
Well, yeah. He was just trying to figure it out. Like looking back, he was just trying to figure out what to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How's he now?
Now he's good. Now he's like, now he's very chill. I mean, he always was a huge stoner, like my whole life. Like I remember like going to a concert for the first time and like smelling weed and being like, oh, daddy. Like that's what he is. So he used to like, I think during that time.
How old is he?
He's 68.
So he's like a bona fide kind of 10, 12 years older than me. So he's like, you know, like a 60s guy.
Kind of, almost.
70s, maybe? Yeah. He was just like a stoner.
Yeah, stoner, and like, I think
music
like...
Music guy?
He's not, no, a baseball guy.
Oh.
Just loves baseball and loved David Letterman. That's like really what I remember. Just, he would like read the baseball encyclopedia and then laugh really loud at Letterman and then go to sleep and then go and then start his day again. And that was it. So he like, he screamed at us constantly when we were younger, and I feel like that was part of like...
His frustration,
but now I think he's gotten older and he's happy and he's just high and he's just chilling. He umpires on the weekends to like...
Oh, yeah?
He loves umpiring.
Your mom do? Still the...
My mom's retired now, so my mom just chills and just calls me constantly and tells me about her friends, kids I don't know, and, you know, their IVF and all that kind of stuff.
So this is your life.
This is my life.
But it doesn't seem like there was a lot of, like, you're not traumatized.
No, I mean, I wouldn't say I'm traumatized, but I think, like, part of... probably like my drive to like succeed and all that kind of stuff probably comes from that time in my life where like I look back and like
I don't want to be him.
Like my dad, like what was he, you know, he wasn't, you know, he always says like he's like, he jokes around, but he's like, I wish I knew you when I moved to LA, you know, because like,
you
know,
you.
To me, like he wished he had my, he wishes that I was his connection. Because, so, you know, he looks back, he lives vicariously through me.
So he's,
you know,
a little self-involved?
I mean, I think they, I think everyone is, right?
No.
Yeah. No?
I know. I mean, they are, but to a degree where he still like looks back at, as that there was this weird kind of missed opportunity, like that things didn't work out for him somehow.
Yeah, like he talks about that. As you get older, you think about that. But I think like me and like my career has like been so awesome for him, especially
The
show's like based on my parents. So it's like
this one.
Yeah, this show. Yeah. So he gets to like, you know, hang out with Steven Weber and tell him to wear an Abraham Lincoln shirt. And like, you know, he likes that. So they've always been good with that. With like early on in my stand up, he would like drive me, you know, like back and forth.
So you didn't go to college?
I did. I went to Emerson.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
So you're in Stanford and then you decide you want to pursue show business or entertainment or, Emerson's a show business school, really,
Yeah.
But they had the bread to put you in Emerson. So you must have done all right with the magic bullets.
Yeah, we got college loans, all that kind of stuff. You know,
oh, you did.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and then I went to Emerson.
And you went through the full 4 years in Emerson?
I did like 3.5, but I did finish. But I just got through it just quickly because I was just like dying to get to LA and perform. Like I was just so focused. Like at Emerson, like all I did was stand up. Like
really,
it was,
that was the dream. Why'd you choose Emerson? You'd heard what?
I heard that comedians went there.
And like who? David Cross, Dennis Leary.
Exactly. I think
Stephen Wright.
Stephen Wright.
Eddie Brill.
Eddie Brill, of course. Mike Bent, the magician. He taught
Mike
a comedy
Bent.
Class. Yes, Mike Bent.
So that's right. Leary taught there. And Mike Bent is my generation. He taught there as well?
He taught me, yeah. He taught me like a comedy class. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
So what are the classes you take in Emerson? This is when there was only one Emerson. It was down on Beacon or wherever. Yeah. Or Commonwealth. Where was this? Down right by the Fenway, kind of.
Yeah, it was.
The bridge there. It was off of Beacon Street, wasn't
that
it?
That was, yeah. When I was there, it was still Beacon, and it was also Boylston and Tremont, and now it's the entire Boylston Street.
Right, and there's one here, too, I think.
Yeah, there's one in L.A., yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, so I just went there because I was like, comedy, well, that's where comedy is, and I just, and like day one, I went to the open mic, which was the Dick Dory's Comedy Vault. I met Dan Mintz, you know, 20 years ago that night, and we became like good friends.
Oh, I haven't heard his name in a while. How's he doing?
He's doing great. You know, he's the voice of Tina on Bob's Burgers, and he...
Right. Yeah, but what's he doing? Like, is he producing something or doing...
He writes on my show.
Oh, he does?
yeah.
Good, yeah.
And we just... I performed that night, and then I basically did stand-up like every... Like, I don't know, it was like 14 times a week. I was like, open mic, comedy studio, comedy. The Comedy Connection was still Faneuil Hall, and it was just like nonstop. I was just, it was insane.
Compulsive.
I was psychotically obsessed with it.
So who was your generation there in Boston, though? So Mintz, he's not from that area, is he?
Well, he's from Alaska, but he started at that time, yeah.
And you're dealing with Dick Dougherty, who I dealt with.
Yeah, Dick Dougherty, he'd come in the back with his weird hat, and he would just sort of judge you. And then Joey was at the Comedy Connection with a stopwatch, and you'd be like,
I don't know Joey.
Yeah, I don't know where he is.
Oliver was the guy at the Comedy Connection. Yeah, I hated him.
He'd stand there with the stopwatch, and if you went, like I remember one time, if you went over your 7 minutes, one time I went 7:16.
On an open mic,
yeah. Mm. It was the Robbie Prince show. Yeah. So it wasn't, yeah, and he would be like, and I'd be like, oh, fuck, I was so excited, killed. And he'd be like, you fucking went 16 seconds over, you never fucking coming back to this fucking place again. It's insane.
Robbie Prince started when I was there.
Yeah.
He was a kid, I think he won a contest or something.
Yeah.
He used to do a song to close.
Yeah, he did a Trader Joe's joke there, I remember, and didn't get it.
He did a song to a Billy Joel song, I think. He's like, I don't like the bar scene. It's full of sleazes. You can get diseases.
Yeah, sounds right. And Kevin Knox was there.
Knoxy.
Too. Knoxy, yeah. He was just, R.I.P. And Gary Goldman was just like, he was the big guy. Like when I got to Boston 99, he already was like, head to LA, did the Tonight Show.
Goldman,
yeah.
No kidding.
Yeah, yeah. And he was, and Eugene
Merman. What
year
is this?
This was 99.
So Goldman, because I missed Goldman's rise to whatever. I met Goldman fully formed at a different time. So he was a guy that, and Eugene Merman, that was a different scene. Because that's the one thing you had in Boston was like, you had the comedy studio alt scene later on, but then you had the kind of provincial dug in Boston thing.
Yeah, Nick's comedy style.
The Noxies and the Mermans don't cross.
No, but I was, you know, I was so young and I was just so perform anywhere. So I would just bounce back and forth. You know, I'd be like, I'd open for like Adam Ferrara Comedy Connection. Then I'd be like performing on a rug in front of five people, like, you know, in Harvard Square somewhere.
Right.
You know?
So they had that stuff there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then when did you decide? So you stacked your classes so you could get out early?
Yeah, I rushed. Because then I basically when I was 20, I got selected to be in the Aspen Comedy Festival, the funniest college comedian thing. Yeah. And I got flown to Aspen. I was like 20, and it was like this
from New York?
From Boston.
Oh.
And it was
you're still in college.
I'm still in college.
Yeah.
And I went, and it was like the first time where it was like, you know, in like a real, like serious, like, industry event sort of thing.
But whose festival was it then? Was it still HBO?
It was HBO, yeah. Lou Viola saw me at Comedy Connection.
Because his daughter went to school in Boston, I think.
Oh, okay, yeah. So yeah, he came
so
in.
So he was scouting around.
Yeah.
Lou with his long gray hair and beard.
Exactly. Just
fucking Lou Viola. Oh. What's he up to now?
I don't know, but I remember just being like, oh my God.
It's Lou Viola. I know, I remember that. I had the same feeling about Lou Viola. Like, these people that used to be important.
I know. Then you look back and you're like, why the fuck was I freaking out?
Freaking out,
well, sweating.
Because these people at different moments have power, right? So he had power over that thing.
Yeah.
And of course, it was reasonable to freak out. You wanted to do the thing.
Oh my God.
But then if you live long enough, you're like, that's the guy that used to be the thing guy?
Yeah, I think he's like a pot farmer now. I'm not even joking. Like, it's like, you care so much about these people. And then it's like, oh, you're not even around.
I know. I remember running into him again. And he was like, he's not even in the business or something.
Yeah, that happens where you like get so stressed out. Then you meet, I remember there was some executive sometime who was like killing me. And then I remember finding out he's like, oh yeah, he works in fashion now. I'm like, what? He's giving me comedy notes for 5 years.
He's out. Oh my God, that's so true.
Yeah.
There was always those people. I had a fundamental disrespect for the other side of the business that didn't really benefit me.
I'm aware. Yeah.
What are you aware of? I didn't understand that you had to, you know, kind of reach across.
Yeah, I know.
You know that about me?
Yeah, you've heard. Yeah, I've heard.
You're from
this podcast.
Yeah, for years.
For years.
Been talking about it for years. It's like Adam Carolla and his construction job. It happened a long time ago. It was clearly life defining, but you should be over it by now.
Yeah, but you're not, and that's fine. That's what makes it you.
I'm over it. So Lou Viola gets you the gig in Aspen.
Yeah.
And then everything changes?
And I mean, I think everything changes. You know, like I go to Aspen, I perform this thing.
Who else is on it?
It was a bunch of college comics. The only person who still does stand up is Matt Goldich, who's a funny guy who writes on Seth Meyers' show. Uh-huh. But that was, it was, you know, we were all like 19, like college kids.
And none of them are around anymore?
No. And then I won that. And then I won it. Like I was like, I won, you know, with my Discman, like listening to Green Day, getting pumped for the shows. And I won that. And then I got put on like another show with like the regular, you know, because I was a college winner. Yeah. So I got put on like the show with like Geraldo and Gaffigan and like clearly was not as good as those guys, but thought I was.
Right.
And that's sort of what, you know, drove my.
Did you do all right on that show though?
I did okay. Yeah, I did okay. But I was.
In Aspen. It's hard to perform there.
Yeah. It's a terrible place to do comedy. You can't breathe.
Audiences are terrible.
And, yeah, it's not great. It's like rich people and executives and you can't breathe.
Ski people and locals.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But it was just this sort of like amazing experience because I was super young. It was my first real experience with like
show business
in a way where like Steve Martin was there. Like I was like, and I was walking up to people, the Wayans brothers in the elevator. I was like, hey, I'm Dan. I just won this festival thing. And they're like, we don't give a shit. But I was so happy.
I was the same way where you're like, I'm here. And they're like, what?
Yeah, no one cares.
And well, it's like, but you realize as you, like now, When you meet these people and you're working in the business, you're on shows forever, that this is just the job. This is their life.
Yeah.
Right? So that, and you're like, I did it. And they're like, what? What'd you do?
You did nothing. You're here. You took a terrible, scary flight to Aspen. You
dipped into the jet and dropped into the bowl there.
Yeah, and you're performing in a ballroom.
Yeah, in a place that's not good for comedy.
Yeah.
Oh, you performed in the ballroom, at that hotel.
Yeah, exactly. George Lopez introduced me.
Oh, good. Yeah. Well, there you go. That's exciting.
Yeah, it was a good time.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a nice guy.
At the hotel, what was that? The Jerome.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I went to that a couple times. That must have been near the end of it.
It was, because then that was it. But then I remember being so upset because I did that, and then the next year was Montreal, and I couldn't do new faces because technically I was done, so I went and just did it. And that's where I saw you again for the second time, and I didn't see you since the Gershwin. I remember being like, hey, Mark, and you're like, ah, look at you, you shiny fuck.
You're always pretty well put together.
Yeah.
Did I say that?
I believe something. I remember everything that people say to me because I was like, there he goes. We're friends.
I thought like that kid's got his shit together and he's clearly puts a lot of effort into, you know, dressing and whatnot.
Yeah.
Like you had a thing going.
Yeah.
And I decided that you were like not part of the problem, but that like I was going to, for some reason, just bust your balls.
Yeah. But yeah. I loved it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I remember seeing you at different points. So in Montreal, then what happened?
Then Montreal, and then at that point I had like, you know, like I had all, and so the Montreal thing was basically I had like my managers.
Were
and,
you like, I? But I won in Aspen. But,
come on, can I
yeah,
just?
I'm, yeah,
and oh, it was so.
Who's the manager?
The manager, I went with Brillstein at that point.
With Bernie?
No. It was
which guy?
It was Tim Sarkis was my manager.
Sarkis, that's good. That's the David Cross, John Groff.
Yeah, exactly.
That's pedigree. Is he still your guy?
He's not my guy.
Yeah.
But he's a good guy.
Yeah.
He, you know, I just was so new.
Sarkis signed you. Where did he sign you?
He signed
out of Aspen.
Yeah. I did that, and then I came for like my first Generals in L.A. and I met him then, and then he signed me there.
Ah.
And
so people were banking on you.
People were banking
Sarkis
on me.
Sarkis doesn't fuck around.
Sarkis doesn't fuck around.
Sarkis wouldn't sign me.
You weren't as shiny.
No, I definitely was not shiny. I was problematic. I had to go into Dave Becky's office when he wasn't even a real manager yet.
He was still working at the Improv?
No, it was after that. He was he's sort of a half a manager at Jimmy Miller's company.
Right.
You know, and I knew he managed Tom Rhodes, so I was sort of like, he'll manage you? And I go in there, I'm like, come on, you manage Rhodes. And he sat me down in front of Jimmy Miller. Wow. Jimmy Miller looked at me and goes, I see a little good and a little bad.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
But we're all friends now. Yeah, it's one of those things.
It all worked out. Yeah,
it worked out okay. Tim, and some people are bigger than me, make a lot more money. But yeah, I found my way.
Yeah, it all
worked
out.
It's in my house, it turns out.
Look at it. It's so nice. I love this place.
It turns out it's just in my house.
I got to move to this neighborhood.
It's my garage.
Yeah.
What neighborhood do you live in? You don't have to say, because people probably confuse you with the other damn Levy.
Yeah, and then
go to that neighborhood looking for him, and you'll go outside and go like, no, it's the other guy, and I don't know where he lives.
My dad's Elliot for the 25th time.
So Sarkis is, he's your guy in Montreal?
He's my guy, but he was so my guy, I believe, in Montreal, he didn't come, and someone else from the company.
Now, that's kind of, so, okay.
Because I realized, you know, I first...
So Sarkis was... He said like, yeah, you're the guy, and then immediately he's like, hey, take care of this kid, you know, because I got Dave Cross business and
he's 20,
John Groff business. Yeah. So who did he put you on? Who did he?
And then there was this guy.
The other guy
was this guy Jay.
Yeah.
And then my friend Brad was also like interning, and it was not a good situation.
Brad ended up managing you?
No, he was just the guy I talked to and be like, hey, is it normal that managers don't call their clients back?
It is, it turns out.
Yeah. And then,
but it's awful.
It's awful. And yeah. I remember that year I just would call him constantly and he wouldn't call me back. Yeah. And then for Christmas I gave him a phone, and I remember he called me. He's like, people are laughing so hard about the phone. I was like, that's so funny, but honestly, call me back.
That's what they always do, that where they like, knowing that you're frustrated and you break through with something clever and funny, and they acknowledge it, but then they go right back to taking your call.
Exactly.
Like, yeah, it's so funny. Take care of yourself.
Good luck out there. Yeah.
So how many years was it before you realized, like, I got to find someone who takes my calls?
Oh, several. I think it was probably like 5 years or something.
Oh, and, I was with Becky for 20 years.
Oh my God, yeah. I was with three yards. I was with 3 yards like a couple years ago. But I've been through all the managers. I like them all, but now I don't have a manager and it's fine.
It's fine?
Yeah.
You don't need one?
I mean, not right.
Got a lawyer?
Yeah, I got a lawyer.
And
I got an agent. I got friends. I don't know. I feel like I call people. Like,
but you're writing, so like, you know, what are you going to do?
What am I going to do? Yeah.
But now, it seems like you should, maybe not. You're a showrunner now.
Yeah, I'm a showrunner. I mean, I still go out and, you know, perform every once in a while.
But no one cares.
No one's filling a theater to be like, oh yeah, let's go check out the showrunner of Indebted and see what he has to say. He has some jokes from 2007.
But he used to write on the Goldbergs.
Yeah. I got Goldberg jokes. I got all sorts of stuff.
I didn't mean to be mean. But see, that's what you bring out of me. Like, there's a moment
there. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, that's it. Like, that's like the old days.
Yeah, we're back.
No one cares.
We're back. You're sneaking around. Yeah. I'm blowing your spot. You're making fun of me.
Yeah, it's great. But what does happen? Because, like, who did I talk to? Was it Adam? Who was in here? Adam?
Pally.
Pally, yeah. Because he's on the show, right?
Yeah, he's the show.
He is the show.
Yeah, he's on the show.
Yeah, he is. He's the main guy.
He's the guy.
He's playing not you.
He's playing a version of me. Yeah, just like how they're playing a version of my family. Yeah.
But this didn't really did it really happen?
Well, not exactly what happened, but basically, you know, we talked a little bit about like my parents, sort of like, you know, how they've lived their life, and then about like a year and a half ago, I was talking to them about, you know, long-term healthcare, because I have a lot of friends who are sort of like dealing with their folks. And yeah. I was like, so do you guys have that? Like, what's your plan? And my mom was like, no. And I was like, what? She's like, we'll come out to California, you know? And I was like, what do you mean you'll come out to California?
Yeah.
She's like, we can hang out. You know, we can live here. You know, it's fine. It's fine. You're so great. And I was like, Mom, no, it's not. No. Like, her whole thing is like, she just thinks I'm so like successful and everything is just, I'm going to take care of everything. And I was like, we need to make a plan. Like, there, you guys cannot just move in with me and my family. Like,
yeah.
Because like you want to come to California.
She's from New York?
She's from Brooklyn. Yeah.
Oh, so yeah, she actually talks like
that. She actually talks like that. That's my friend Dresser's playing her.
She actually talks like a Brooklyn Jewish lady.
Oh yeah, totally.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
So their plan was sort of like, he's successful and he's got a place in his house and we'll live there.
Yeah, but I don't really. That was the thing. Like, there wasn't really like a place. So I was like, we need to, you know, sort of sit you down and figure it out. So we kind of started like organizing like their retirement and their sort of plan. And that's when I was like, I should pitch this show because this is insane.
So are they here?
No, now they're in Connecticut, but they're getting ready to, you know, they want to move here, but they're not sure because my brother's got a baby in Brooklyn. It's a whole. thing.
But you got babies here, right?
I got babies here, yeah.
How many babies?
I got a, not really babies, but I have a 5-year-old and a 7-year-old.
How old's your brother's kids?
A baby, like 3 months old.
Oh, well, yours are going to remember them. They should,
Trust me.
Come out here for a few years. And then when that kid, the brother's kid, turns into a person.
And ship him back.
Yeah, go back there.
Come on.
There's a plan. I made the plan.
Thank you. Go call my mom. She'll be happy to talk to you.
But, all right, so, but after, like, the thing is like, it's, this is one of those situations where they asked me, like, do you want to talk to, you know, Dan Levy?
Yeah.
Not Levy. I'm like, yeah, I know that guy. But, like, you know, when I knew you, you're, like, just this kid with a haircut. And then, like, all of a sudden, I'm like, what the fuck is he's running? He made a show? He's running a, he's one of those guys that figured this out, a way to make a living without drag, you know, wandering around the city, doing the road.
Really what happened was I was on the road, like in 2000. Like,
I remember you were trying.
Yeah, I was trying hard. I was everywhere. And I had a million miles. I was, you know, performing wherever I could. I was doing the Comedy Central Presents and with bangs. You know, I was doing all that stuff.
The bangs, right.
Bangs. So, and a vest. And no, then it was.
I just did a special with a vest. Was that a mistake for you?
100%, yes.
Dude. I feel like it's going to be a mistake for me, too.
Yeah, yeah, you know what?
Because I bought the vest, and I thought, this looks pretty good, but I haven't worn it since I did the special.
Oh, yeah, I can't.
I don't know why I do that.
I can't ever do any Throwback Thursdays, because it's completely embarrassing, and I'm like, you know what? I'm not going to just...
But you were like, so we have things in common. So you're the guy that bought the thing for the special and never wore it again?
Yeah, I can't wear it. You don't... I mean, you should Google Dan Levy Comedy Central Presents. I did a... I wore a suit. I did a special like three years ago, whatever it was, and I wore a nice suit. And that's a good look. But anyways, yeah, it was, I was, you know, trying, I was on the road, I was doing all the things. And then I was always like, you know, writing scripts and stuff. And then it was the year that I wrote a script.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, you see? Look at it.
That's, dude.
I'm telling you.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Everything's
bad in that picture. Yeah, just don't even, it's
but
not.
But you know what's horrible? You look a lot like me.
Yeah, remember, people used to say that.
Yeah, I mean, like, I feel like that must have been why I was like, I like that guy somehow. We're connected because he's like a little version of me.
Yeah.
Somehow. Yeah, but I had hair like that too, but this was not, and you were pudgy.
Yeah, I think, well, I wouldn't say I was pudgy, but
no?
I mean, I guess I was a little bit.
Maybe it was something about the vest and everything.
No, I mean, I wasn't working out or anything. I was just sort of, you know, eating
candy.
But
you had sort of this kind of like early alt-rock thing going, you know, right?
Yeah, I was just sort of grasping at straws, I think. I was like, I'll wear this vest. I'll take this haircut. You know, I always was, you know.
Yeah, yeah, like, who am I? Maybe this will make it clear.
And it did not.
That's a bold look with the tie loose, but it's not really a cool vest. It looks like from a suit that your dad had or something.
No, it was fully picked out for the special. It was.
I know. I did that too. I have a history of bad haircuts and bad fashion choices.
Yeah, it's not great. Now I feel like it's okay. But
no, you seem to have leveled off.
Thanks. But, I stopped, trying so hard. Now just.
But after Montreal, so you settle into New York?
No, after Montreal, I moved to L.A. And then,
but weren't you in New York doing comedy?
I was. It was weird because I was just basically back and forth a lot because my parents were in Stanford. So I'd be in Boston and then I would drive into the city to do spots. Like I got passed at the comic strip. Lucian Hold, you know, came over. He was like, you could be good here. So I would like drive in and do the check
spots.
He liked
you because you weren't angry.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And then same with like the Cellar, like all those places. I just started performing, so I just didn't want to give up not being able to perform there.
Right.
So I just started driving back and forth.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and didn't tell anybody.
Didn't tell anyone.
Sure, I can do any spot you want.
Yeah.
Don't sleep.
What am I doing?
Yeah.
Now I'm in North Haven.
Yeah. So you did that?
I did that, and then I moved here, and then I basically was performing and trying to write. I was interested in writing, you know, like interested in writing scripts and
you
stuff.
You were?
Yeah.
And you actually did it.
And I actually did it.
So you didn't have any drug problems?
No, I was, before I went to Emerson, there was a girl I knew from Connecticut who went to Emerson and immediately got hooked on heroin. So I was like completely-
In Boston. That era?
Yeah.
Wow.
So I was very-
That's ambitious.
I was very stressed about heroin. So when I first went to Emerson, I didn't, I was first at school, I wasn't doing anything. And then I slowly began just like smoking pot constantly. And then I was pretty much high a lot of the early aughts, just constantly high.
Yeah.
And that was pretty much it. But I didn't get deep into anything.
The heroin's scary. So, but you were able to get the work done. That somehow or another, here's the fucking problem. And this is was, let's get to the resentment issue. So, like, you were able somehow, like, you were gung-ho, you were doing the comedy, you were doing the road, you fucking, you know, you were in it to win it and fucking be the comic guy, but somehow or another, you knew that you weren't going to be essentially that and that this other option was probably good.
Yeah, well, I didn't really know, when I first started doing it, I wasn't sure what was going to happen, but I was just writing it and I was like, you know, oh, okay, I'll write a show, I'll be in the show and I'll, you know, that will be my thing.
Well, that was the goal of everybody, like you want to be the sitcom, the center of a sitcom.
Right, exactly.
So you're in LA, you're doing stand-up. Are you making, but were you getting, what were you headlining?
Yeah, I was headlining because I was on a lot of like random MTV bullshit like in the early 2000s. Oh, so I was hosting MTV things. So I would go and like.
That's why you were annoying.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, and then I was like super high energy. You know, I was everything you didn't want to see.
Yeah. And then. You're the things that I could have done if I let myself be that pandery. And you represented to me some version of me that didn't happen, but I kind of think it should have. But instead, I'll resent you.
Right. So okay. So here I am at Go Bananas bombing with spiky hair.
Go Bananas.
Go Bananas.
Where was that place?
Cincinnati.
Oh, yeah. That's right. I had a bad night there.
Yep. So did I. One time it went so bad. I think one night it was like... I had one of the things where I thought I saw the light.
Yeah.
So I just got off. It was going bad anyways. Like, thank God I got the light. Good night, Cincinnati. And walk off stage. And the booker was like, you did 21 minutes.
did you have to go back out?
Yeah. They're like, you got to go. I was like, sorry. What's up?
Go back out. I went there. The guy booked me thinking that I was a huge star because of Air America. Mm-hmm. And he paid me. He made a deal for a fucking insane amount of money. And I sold like 12 tickets.
Oh my God.
It was just the fucking worst. Like at the end of it, I'm like, you don't have to give me all the money. He's like, no, I made a deal. I'm like, yeah, but you're never going to work me here again. I'm like, I made a deal. I'm like, all right, fuck it.
Oh my God. And you did 23 minutes?
No, I did the whole time.
Okay.
I'll do the time.
Yeah.
That's one thing I learned. You're going to do the fucking time. It might be terrible, but I did it.
Got to.
Yeah, if anything, I get in trouble for going too long. Like that's my, even if I'm sucking. If I'm sucking, I go longer.
I know. You love the in between. You love the in between the jokes and people just waiting.
I don't know what it is I like, but like, I think really if I assess it properly, it's sort of like, I don't want them to be able to say that they didn't get their money's worth. Like if I'm terrible, like I'm going to keep trying.
Yeah.
And it just gets ridiculous. And instead of doing an hour, I do an hour and 45, none of it good. But they can't. They're gonna leave. Going like he tried.
He tried. He was there for 3 hours.
Yeah, we just couldn't get us. We held out.
There was one night in Orlando where I did. I
go there. I don't have a good feeling about it.
No, it was for Puma, and it was like, I don't know if I could say what it was, but they.
was it that bad?
Well,
they still associated with it.
So I went, it was like a fashion show thing that they're like, we're going to have you. And the same sort of thing. They were paying me like too much money, especially then to do this.
Yeah.
And I got there and they're like, hey, just so you know, it's going to be like, you know, there's going to be 10,000 people and you're going to come out after this fashion show and you're going to have to do like a lot of material and, you know, write a lot of golf jokes. So I had like a conference call about golf jokes.
Corporate? Which company sent you on this? MTV?
It was an MTV Puma thing. And then I get there and they're like, hey, just so you know, there's only gonna be like 5,000 people. And I'm like, okay, that's fine. And they're like, you still got the golf jokes? I'm like, yeah. And then they put me on a bus. I get to the Orlando airport, whatever. Yeah. And they're like, hey, just, you know, there's we're hoping like 1,500 people here now, you know? Yeah. So just, I'm like, cool. I get backstage and there's all these people just naked putting on Puma like clothes for the fashion show.
Yeah.
And then I get right to the rope or whatever, right by the curtain.
Yeah.
And the stage manager's like, there's 200 people outside, so just have fun. And I was like, okay, 10,000 to 200.
Yeah.
And I go out stage and I'm like, hello Orlando. And I realize I'm on a catwalk.
Yeah.
So I put my set list of my like jokes that I wrote about like Tiger Woods or whatever the hell it was on the stool, and I walk all the way down the catwalk and I'm like, hey Orlando, how's it going? And it's just fucking dead silence, like no one wants to be there. And I was like, I got some jokes. And then I realized all my jokes were on the stool, so I just quickly like slowly head up the runway, just walking very quickly, and I grabbed the joke, and it had some terrible Buick jokes, and it was terrible. And it was one of those things where I was like, they're not gonna pay me. And then I got some email like on Monday being like, thank you so much. We all loved it. And I was like, you guys weren't there, but I don't care.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's, those are the worst. But did they pay you?
They paid me.
Those are the, those were terrible.
Yeah.
Oh my God, man. I used to do, like when you do, when I worked for Comedy Central, you know, they would want you to represent the network or whatever, right?
Yeah.
So they'd be like, you know, so-and-so from promotions is going to contact you about this show that maybe have, they want Comedy Central talent for the advertisers. So you go do those things and they're never good.
No, it's always bad. You always feel bad.
Yeah.
Not great.
So you're dressed up in Puma and
so, yeah, so I'm just bombing in a Puma hat.
But you walk with the money and then your agents go like, I heard it went great. Like, who'd you fucking talk to?
Yeah.
There's no way that went great. And they don't even give a fuck.
Oh, I'm like drafting an apology email. I'm like,
and right when the other one comes through, yeah. Good job. Like, oh, good.
Yeah, thank you so much. Can't wait to do it again. Yeah.
The worst.
Terrible.
So, all right, so you're out here, you're headlining, you're going back and forth, you're doing club work, but what, you don't draw, or you do? You draw a little bit? Like, I draw people? Like,
oh, did at that, no.
In your heyday?
No.
At the peak of it?
At the peak of Your Face or Mine.
Yeah. Was that an MTV show?
Yeah. Like, I feel like at the peak, I'd go to that. Remember that terrible club, Deja Vu Comedy Club?
Man, where was that?
It was in the middle of Missouri? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Like, I don't think I did that one.
Yeah, it was not great. And I would go there, and people would show up, and I'd be like, I got a demo.
Yeah. Really? Those are your people?
Those are my people. Just like,
but you would be put on the road.
Yeah, you put on the road as like MTV.
And
then, but it was fine. You know, right. I was still doing lots of colleges. I did the college humor tour. That was like where I would do a lot of stuff. And
so you were a successful NACA act.
I was pretty successful.
So you go do the clean show thing, and they, you know, a bunch of colleges would be like, we want him to come to our school.
Exactly. And then I'd go and not be clean, and then they'd, you know, be upset. Mad. And I was like, what am I supposed to do? I've been doing comedy for like 6 years. You want me to do an hour clean? I have to curse a lot. Talk about my dick or something.
Yeah, right, for an hour.
Yeah.
How am I going to close?
I have a giant condoms joke that I have to close with.
Or else it's not going to go well. No one is going to know it's over.
I've been perfecting my tequila fall. It's got to happen.
Dick Daugherty says I got to keep falling.
Yeah. And then it was actually Whitney Cummings, because we were both like writing pilots, and she was like, hey, if my show gets picked up, would you want to like help me, you know, punch it up? Because we always sort of wrote jokes together and stuff, me and
really?
Whitney.
How'd you know Whitney?
Just from stand-up in LA. We became friends.
Same generation, kind of?
Kind of. Like, she started after me.
Yeah.
But we just became friends.
How old are you?
I'm 38.
Hmm.
Yeah.
You're around the same age, right?
Yeah, and yeah. We hosted a show together at M Bar. We became like really good friends.
M Bar, yeah.
Yeah, and then she was like, hey, I'm doing this, I have this pilot, Two Broke Girls, and I'm doing a show, Whitney. If they get picked up, would you want to help me do it? And I was like, sure, I mean, let me know. And then I the shows got picked up, and I worked on her first show, Whitney.
Oh, you picked the wrong one.
I picked the wrong one. That's where she was. and then I went there, and then that was the first time I was ever in a sitcom writer's room ever. And I was like, oh, this is a whole, I did not know what this was. And I was still like doing random colleges, like that first year of being in a sitcom room. Whitney. I was still like traveling. I was like doing some stupid Red Bull thing.
But she didn't know much either, did she? She had never really been in a room before, had she? So she wrote this thing and she was learning on the fly as well. At least you had a peer in the situation.
Yeah, like at least I knew what she thought was funny. I mean, I didn't know like how at all how a sitcom is run.
So
at
who
that
was
point.
In the room? Who was running the show? Who was running
Betsy
Whitney?
Thomas was running Whitney.
Oh, okay.
And it was just really it was a crazy experience, because it was that thing that you hear about. You know, it's like every week they'd want to change what the show was about. It should be about her friend. It should be about a relationship.
There was problems immediately.
Yeah,
is what you're saying.
Yeah, it was just, it was difficult, and she was.
And it was on the air.
It was on the air. Yeah, it was like
on NBC.
It was on NBC. Yeah, and it was like.
It was D'Elia was the love interest.
Yeah, D'Elia was the love interest, and it was just like this intense sort of.
I remember when it was happening.
Yeah, there was billboards everywhere, and it was like.
Yeah, because I think she asked me to play a part of a psychiatrist. In one of the episodes, I was like,
"Yeah, you said no."
Yeah,
yeah.
I couldn't do it, but I was like, I really didn't do any of that kind of work. And at the point I was at then, because it wasn't that long ago.
Yeah,
right. Was it five, 6 years ago?
No, I think it was like 9 or 10 years ago.
But I was already in the podcast. I was already doing the podcast.
Yeah.
I remember. And I was sort of like, "Do I need to do that? I don't need to do it."
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then
was it like one season?
It was two seasons.
Yeah.
One season was shorter.
It didn't take,
but it was a really good experience for me just watching it all sort of go down and sort of like, you know, I went from seeing her friend and just sort of like being there for her and sort of watching like how a sitcom gets made, you know, and it was just,
now you don't speak to her and,
we had a horrible falling out. No, I still talk to her all the time.
But, so you guys went through that together, but you were able to see, you know, sort of I would say the experience outside of learning how to be in a writer's room or how these things are structured, the more important lesson you realize was who's in control, how things can go wrong, what happens when they do go wrong, you know, how do you handle it? How does your friend Whitney handle it?
Yeah.
And so it was a baptism in fire, really.
Oh, yeah. And then from there, Mulaney called me and he's like, hey, I'm going to be doing...
Is he going to go through it twice?
Right. Yes. So then he's like, hey, my show got picked up. Come help me. And then we did that show and it was like sort of like the same thing again.
But the weird thing about that Mulaney show is almost like it was almost like it was happening to him.
Yeah.
Like it just seemed like it was ill-fitting from the get-go.
I think what it was a show on NBC and then there was notes to make it a certain way and then didn't get picked up and then Fox took it and he sort of did a version of what I think he wanted it to be and then we started making it and we were in like a real bubble making the show because it never aired.
At Fox. Yeah.
And it was, you know, he's the funniest person ever. It was so much fun, you know, making that show.
How many ran at NBC?
No, none, just the pilot.
Okay.
And then they picked up 16 episodes at Fox, and then we were just making these episodes, and we thought...
What went wrong?
Well, I just think it just was not, like, it wasn't, like, super clear what the show was, I think, looking back, you know, it was really funny.
Yeah.
But I think it was just, I don't know, people didn't get into it, and it just didn't work, and then they pulled it from the air. But it was, again, I was, like, there, sort of, I had, like, a better sense of how these things ran then, so I was sort of, like, more, like, producing it with him and sort of being like, let's do this, let's do that. But it's still, you know, it's was so intense. And then I was like, oh my God.
Yeah. Because like, was it misunderstood or you guys weren't putting together what you wanted to put together? That's what I'm trying to understand. Like, was the show that was being presented on Fox the show that you guys wanted it to be?
I mean, at that time, yes. I think looking back, we probably should have made it differently. Oh. But in that moment, you know, we are making, you know, the problem is, I think when you're making a multicam like my show is, like, it's like those. It's like it's an old school format, you know.
Yeah,
so
sure.
It's like, you know, you want to make a show that it's an easy digestible format, you know. So whenever you try to do anything that's not that in that format, it gets confusing,
right?
And I think that sort of was the lesson, you know.
Yeah, because that format is hard to, you know, it is what it is.
It is what it is. So it's hard to sort of be, you know, change it, you know, to do anything outside of it.
Like the most you can do with that format, Seinfeld did.
Right.
And they had a lot of money and a lot of sets.
Yes.
So if you don't have that, you do what you do.
Yeah. And it's also, you know, there was more room to like figure things out, you know, in the 90s and stuff too. You know, it's like, I feel like
it all comes down to money. I mean, I guess it's, but the truth of the matter is it's fucking vaudeville, dude.
Mm-hmm.
You got three sets and, you know, it's a joke delivery system. So figure out how these characters are going to be at least believable as caricatures of whatever they are, and then write them jokes.
Exactly. That's what on my show, I'm always like, here's my notes. Louder, faster. Let's go. And one time Fran was like, you just keep saying louder, faster. I'm like, I know. That's what I want it to be.
Yeah.
That's what it is. It's just a Jewish family just talking at each other. So let's just do that.
Yeah. Interesting. So, all right. So you get after Whitney and Mulaney, now you're like a writer guy.
Yeah, and then I was in.
Stand up, really.
Yeah, so then
don't need it anymore.
So I stopped performing. Like I definitely stopped going on the road, except I did a special in between then.
In between what?
In between that and the Goldbergs,
between Mulaney and the Goldbergs.
Yeah, ish, like a, you know, like I forget, 2016. So then I did.
Out of nowhere, you did a special.
So
you just had to get it out.
I did a CISO special, which probably, you know, remember CISO? R.I.P. terrible, another terrible decision.
So Whitney said they're giving away money.
go to CISO.
Right.
No. Yeah. Basically, it was something, you know, as a comedian, it's always something I really wanted to do.
Oh, you wanted to do the hour special.
I wanted to do an hour special. Right. I've been, you know, writing jokes, you know, forever. Yeah. I have, you know.
Yeah.
So then I was like, I want to do this thing. And then I went on like, you know, a 10-week tour and sort of put the special together. And then
do you like it?
I do like it. I think it was really...
But the thing that I remember about CISO is like it just went away and people were like, do we get our stuff back?
No.
Where's the stuff?
I should have known. I had like a conference call with them like, you know, before it came out. And I remember one of the executives was like, sorry, I'm late for the call. Just dropped my kids off. Hey, Dan, it's crazy. You have kids? And I'm like, my whole fucking special is about kids. This is not going to go well. So
the main guy didn't see it.
Yeah, yeah.
And
so
it was already going down the drain.
It was. I guess they were. I think they were already like, you know, pulling down the cubicles as our conference call was going on.
Can you hear that, Dan?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're moving.
We're moving. Where?
Downsizing.
Oh, did Apple buy you? No. Who bought you? No one. We're gonna just close everything. Okay. Can I get my special back? No. Where will it be? Nowhere. Okay.
Gotta go.
Hello. Wait, but I asked every comedian to tweet about it, please. It's very annoying to text people.
So it didn't even air?
No, it aired.
Okay.
It totally aired.
It was on CISO, which is a streaming thing, right?
It was a streaming thing.
And then it all went away.
And then it was done. And then I was like, well, I'm glad that I, you know, went on the road for 11 weeks with a 3-month-old baby.
You got paid for it, though.
Oh, yeah, I got paid.
But and, now with this special, do you...
So much money, too. CISO was just giving me so much money.
They didn't give you a lot of money?
No.
Do you have a copy of the thing?
Yeah.
Oh, good.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's good. I'll sell it to you in my trunk.
So eventually you can just like throw it up somewhere, no?
Yeah. Yeah, I think
so. On YouTube or whatever?
Yeah, it's funny.
Under a different name? Like, I don't know how that got up there, but yeah. You can go watch it.
Yeah, exactly. It was so weird. Someone pirated the Dan Levy Lion CISO special. Someone is a hardcore Dan fan.
That's crazy.
Crazy. Well, I guess I'll watch it. It's live on Facebook.
Do that.
Yeah, it'll only take me 10 years to figure out how to upload it. I'm sure it'll be fine.
So after that, who hires you for the Goldbergs?
So Adam Goldberg.
Yeah, so that's the other tie-in. Like, I know the other Adam Goldberg.
Right,
so,
yeah.
I don't know the other Daniel Levy.
Right.
But I do know the other Adam Goldberg, and it's the bane of his existence.
Right.
It used to be, not so much anymore.
Yeah.
And you guys wrote it in to fuck with him. I don't think that was nice, but what are you going to do?
So, I didn't do it.
You knew it was happening.
Yeah. Yeah. And,
yeah.
And then that was, so then Adam called me and then he was like, my buddy Steve was like, you know, you should bring on Danny's funny. He was looking for like, you know, just some funny people to bring on the show.
How long did you write on the Goldbergs for?
Three seasons.
And who's Adam Goldberg? Seasons. Where'd that guy come from?
He's a writer. He was, you know, writing movies and TV shows. And
okay.
And then he had the show. So he's
and so you're working with Jeff Garlin a lot.
Yeah, Jeff Garlin all the time.
Uh-huh.
And I work with him and then I see him, you know, Jones on Third. So
yeah.
I see a lot of Garlin in my life.
the restaurant?
Yeah, the restaurant. There's a restaurant. He's
Jones?
At. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's still around, Jones?
Yeah.
Yeah. And but
CISO bought it and then...
So we don't know what's going to happen.
We don't know what's going to happen. Come but, to CISO's.
The restaurant. Where they just have five TV screens over the bar running all their specials. And, yeah. No, that's where you can see it.
Yeah,
you have to go to the bar at CISO's.
Yeah, that's what something I would fucking do. Someone would be like, hey, the people who own CISO are opening this restaurant. You want to invest? They love you. They loved your special. They know it's all about your kids. I'm like, okay, yeah. Let me.
That sounds great. Can I eat there whenever I want?
Yeah,
they'll have a table for you every time.
Oh, that's cool.
Oh, it is cool. So you do that for 3 years and you're like, I'm going to leave. I got an idea. I'm going to do my own thing.
Yeah. Well, during that time I kept on, you know, I was trying to get my own thing going. So I would like, you know, pitch shows and, you know, I wrote a show the year before that, before the show happened, I had another show that I wrote that didn't make.
Before the new one.
Yeah.
So which one, what was that called?
That one was, oh my God.
Looks like you've done some acting here and there too, eh?
Oh yeah. I played Fedora Guy. Yeah, I've played Cool Therapist on...
On Whitney?
On Atypical.
Oh, because I think I was supposed to be the therapist on Whitney.
Yeah, it was on Atypical.
Oh, no. And the Fedora guy was on Crazy Ex-Girlfriend?
Yeah, and then I play a comedian on my show. I play Annoying Cousin Dan.
Oh, really?
Who's inviting people to his comedy shows.
Got to write yourself in.
Yeah, why not?
So Indebted.
Yes.
The one you tried to sell before this was called what?
The one I tried to sell before this, I forget. I think it was this untitled Dan Levy.
And what was it?
What was
the angle?
That was based on just me and my wife and our young kids, and it was just like a family show. Just
and they were like, well, yeah, we've like, seen this before.
Yeah, what is this?
I mean, who are you really? It doesn't seem like you're ill defined.
Yeah, what?
And then you said, but I got a vest.
I got a vest. I got a point of view.
and Indebted. So we discussed sort of the foundation of this, and these are really kind of like your parents. And Steven Weber, was he your first choice?
Yeah, well, because they auditioned dad, so I knew.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, we wanted him.
Yeah, and that, and he knows how to do these three camera things.
Oh, he's incredible. Yeah, I mean, him and Fran together done like 500 episodes. So like talking to them about like being on the Paramount lot in the 90s.
Right.
Wings, yeah. And he really is like a true like version of like my dad. It's, uh-huh. it's pretty great.
Now, so tell me now that your dad's, his buddy Steve's not working on the show.
No, he's not. He's not involved. He's not involved in this project. I will say, though, Steve's big thing is with my dad, they sneak onto lots. And when we were writing Mulaney, like it was a very, obviously a very stressful situation. And there was one moment in the middle of the day when we're like trying to figure out what the hell to do. Steve and my dad bust in the writer's room and Steve is wearing a Hawaiian shirt and holding his camera. And he's like, Wizard of Oz was filmed here. We're like, see what the hell? And everyone's like, who is this guy? Is he like a psychotic Mulaney stalker?
And your dad was there too?
Yeah, yeah. My dad is the king of like just like finding ways into places and being like, hey, there's no security at this this comedy show. I'm like, thanks. Please take your seats.
And he's also the guy that called up your college agent to tell him he did not.
Exactly.
He seems like you tolerate a lot with this guy.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. When I was flying, I used to meet him at airports. You know? And he just, you know, just constantly screams at everyone, you know? So he would, there was one time, this is kind of an insane story, but he was very big on like, you know, getting on, like, you know, upgrading. That was his big thing. He's like, make sure you get there, put your name in a list. Is your name in a list? Every day. He'll be like, is your name in a list? Do you have the GoGo Wi-Fi password? So he always texts me or my brother.
Yeah.
In the air, got the GoGo. I'm like, okay, Dad, we'll contact you if we need you. And he's like, meet me at Terminal H. We're like in, you know, Chicago together. Yeah, and he's like, I'll walk you to the terminal. I'll talk to them for you. And I was like, okay, I'm, you know, 25. I can talk to these people. He's like, Levy, we won't put him on the upgrade. He's executive platinum flyer. He's so proud of that.
Yeah.
So I think he was more proud of me at being executive platinum flyer than he is in my own TV show.
Yeah.
A million miles.
So you're an American?
Usually, yeah.
Okay. So, all right. So he's proud, multi-platinum.
Gets
you in. Yeah.
And
so
then,
what's the story?
I want to get it upgraded. And they're like, okay, sorry, there's no upgrade list. And he's like, he's executive platinum. And I was like, sorry, sir. And he's like, just so you know, he's flying around the country. Like, these people give a shit about me. He's a comedian and, you know, you can put on the upgrade list. And they're like, sorry, sir, we can't. And my dad's like, I'm looking. There is a spot. They're like, sorry, we can't. And my dad goes, you're the reason for 9/11. And then runs away. And I'm saying they're being like, I'm sorry. He's got some issues and you could send security, but I'm going to go into Hudson and get some sunflower seats.
So he just ran away?
Just ran away. It was the most insane thing that he's ever done. And I always talk to him about that. And he's always like, yeah, well, that guy, he could have upgraded you.
Does he have mental problems?
I mean,
is he on medicine or just weed?
Yeah, no. He's
Okay.
He's good now.
Okay. But you always got along with him. It seems like you always...
We got along. I mean, he screamed at me like most of my childhood was him screaming at me, but
in a real way?
Yeah. But yeah. I would do stupid shit, so, you know.
It doesn't sound right.
Yeah.
It's traumatizing.
It's very traumatizing. He just, you know, it would just be like, Daniel, what the fuck did you do? But there was things that I did, like when I was 8, I drove his car through the garage. Like, you know, shit that, you know, would make you go crazy.
Right.
You know?
So you kept that up.
I kept that up. Getting kicked out of Hebrew school. You know, like all this stuff.
That.
You
yeah.
know, whatever.
Made the Hebrew school teacher cry.
I threw stink bombs.
Oh.
Yeah.
And so you're out as a Jew?
I'm out.
Yeah.
I'm out. I'm Catholic now.
But so... But now he's like, is a consultant on the show?
No, he thinks he is. I film them for after every episode. We're going to upload like a video of them talking about, you know, the story of the episode. And
the real parents?
My real parents.
Yeah.
And we film that. And that's as far as it goes. But
that's a lot.
Yeah.
He's like, now it's full circle. He's made it.
Oh, yeah.
You just got to get Steve involved.
Oh, no. I saw the last taping they came to. And I kept telling them, I was like, guys, like, I want you to come to the show. I know it's exciting, but you can't be here a lot because I'm very stressed. Like, I'm spiraling.
Yeah,
so I can't have you just like in my space. And they're like, okay. So they come to the last taping. During like the last scene, I look over. My dad is like on the camera op next to this guy. I'm like, Dad, what are you doing? He's like, Boomer's cool. He's going to email me. I'm like, it's a union job. I was like, get off the cameras.
Boom is cool.
Yeah, Boomer's cool.
Oh, Boomer's
cool.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's the...
Camera operator.
Yeah, oh, okay.
His name was his name.
Oh,
he was sitting next
name.
To him, like on a horse. Like on the camera saddle.
Oh, boy. So how many episodes you shoot?
We shot 13.
Really? Yeah. So they're all loaded up?
Yeah, wish that I'm still editing them, yeah, but they're ready to go.
And Adam, like, you guys have a history?
Yeah, well, I knew him just from...
I talked to him. He seemed to think you, like, were friends.
Yeah, no, we're totally friends. Okay, never spoke to him the entire time. I was like, read these lines. No, we were friendly just through comedy. Mm. And then...
In New York?
No, in L.A. Oh. And then our kids went to preschool together, and then we became, like, just, like, dad friends hanging out.
Yeah.
And I wrote a movie, like, 5 years ago or something, and then he read a table read. He read like the guy, and I was like, "This guy's so fucking funny."
Yeah,
and I already knew he was so funny. So then when it got picked up, I was like, "You know, can you do this? Are you available?"
And for this thing,
yeah.
What happened to that movie?
It went nowhere.
Oh,
yeah.
There's a movie you wrote.
Movie I wrote. Yeah.
How many things have you written that are nowhere?
I wrote the movie. I wrote that movie called Plus One, and of course this happens to me. I wrote a movie called Plus One. It was like Yorma, you know, Lonely Island. Yorma Taccone. He was going to direct it. It was like we did a table read. It was a whole thing, and then it didn't happen. And then like three other movies came out called Plus One. Yeah, I was like, I love show business.
Yeah,
and then I wrote Triplets, the sequel to Twins.
Uh huh.
And that
was with Danny DeVito, Arnold Schwarzenegger, and another guy,
and Eddie Murphy.
Oh.
And I gotta say, you know what? I had to pitch them, you know, to get them into this movie.
Were you being paid to write this, or this was your idea?
No, I was getting paid to write. Yeah, I was getting paid to write. It was like a, you know, we pitched on it.
Yeah.
And then we got, you know, Ivan Reitman signed off on the pitch. And then we pitched it to Arnold Schwarzenegger's house.
Yeah.
Pitched it to him, and that was an insane experience.
Yeah.
And he's like,
was he governor?
He was not governor.
Yeah.
And but he was, his essence was insane, you know.
Really?
Yeah, just like, you know, this is a guy whose like voice has been in my head since I don't even ever.
Yeah.
And he is wearing like Lululemon, and he looks older, and he's eating chicken. He's like, I heard you're so funny. I'm like, no way. You see my C-cell special? There's no way you know that I'm funny. And then we like sit down, and he's petting his Labrador retriever as I'm pitching him the movie. And I look up, and there's an oil painting of him petting the same Labrador retriever. And I was like, my life is insane. I'm pitching with my buddy Steve Aslone. And then we are like getting to the end, and Steve has like the emotional part of Triplets, but like the part, you know, whatever it was. And in the middle of that, like Arnold's really looking at us, he's like, okay, this is real good. And then a fucking horse walks in the kitchen.
A horse.
Named Whiskey.
A horse?
An actual like horse animal. And he stands up and he goes, Whiskey, what are you doing? You're ruining the pitch. And we're like, what? And everyone's like, all his other people are just like nodding, like, okay, yeah, Whiskey's here. And we're like, no.
It's
a horse in the house. And then he brings it back down. Then he sits and he's like, I'm so sorry, you know, Whiskey. And we're like, no, we don't know Whiskey, but we'll keep on pitching. And then after that, we're working out, and Ivan's like, what an interesting guy, right? And I'm like, there's a horse at this pitch, guys. Is no one going to bring this up?
And then, Ivan was there with you?
Yeah, they were all there. And then we had to pitch Dane DeVito. And
he's a great guy.
He's great. He was great. He was the least interested. He was like, why do you want to do this? And we're like, I don't know. Can we pitch it to you? And we pitched him the entire movie. And he had like a long goatee at the time. And he was so funny. He like was like really thinking about it. And he looks at my buddy Steve and he goes, could you just tell me it one more time? And Steve goes, what part? He goes, just the beginning. We're like, the whole fucking pitch. And then after that, we've had like 9 meetings at this point. And then the producer was like, okay, so now you guys need to get Eddie Murphy. Or else we can't, like, you know, green light it or whatever.
Yeah.
So we're like,
yeah.
I was like, this is amazing. And I remember hearing you interview Chris Rock, and you asked him what he talked to Eddie Murphy about. And he said, comedy, the comic strip, all that stuff. So I was like, all right, if I could just get Eddie Murphy to talk about the comic strip.
Bring up Dennis Wolfberg. And
yeah,
good.
Exactly.
Yeah, right.
So then we're sitting there and we're waiting for Arnold. Okay, this is the day. We're in Eddie Murphy's house. It's incredible. We're waiting to go in and, you know, we're waiting for him. And then I see... We hear his voice, and he just goes, oh, the motherfucker's in the house, or something like that. And we're like, oh my God, it's fucking Eddie Murphy.
Yeah.
And he brings into this like amazing room, super high ceilings.
Yeah.
And we're waiting for Arnold. And he's like, I don't know where Arnold is. And we're like, yeah, and it's like trying to kill time.
Yeah.
And then this executive, Ally Bell, actually looks at Eddie Murphy, and she goes, you know, Eddie, Dan just put out a Seesaw special, swear to God. So of course, Eddie Murphy, huge Seesaw fan.
Yeah, of course. He's ready.
So he was like, oh, comedian? And I was like, yeah. And he's like, oh. And I was like, yeah, you know, I started the comic strip. He's like, the comic strip! And it was just like, it was on. And it was just like, he was so fucking into it.
Yeah.
And he started talking about comedy, and he was like, you know, he's like, I want to get back out there. And then, and this was like, it's a couple years ago now. And I was like, you should do it, you know?
Yeah.
And he was like, I'm thinking about it. He's like, yeah. He's like, you know, there's just so many good specials and comedy so good right now. And he was just being so fucking funny. And he was talking about, you know, just the Dennis Wolfberg. He was talking about Lucian, all these people.
Right.
And it was just so awesome. And I was like, oh my God, like I broke through. Like I'm just talking comedian to comedian.
Yeah.
And then it was the day, this is what year it was. It was a day that Donald Trump attacked Arnold because he was the new host of The Apprentice. Okay. That was that day.
Before he was president.
No, he was president.
Oh, right.
So Arnold comes in a cowboy hat. He's like, I'm so sorry I'm late. Could you believe the Twitter storm? And we're like, and he's like, you know, Donald is obsessed with me. And like, I'm here. Like, I think, I'm like thinking back to like Dick Doherty's comedy ball. I'm thinking about like my entire life. And
keep
I'm like,
falling.
I am in Eddie Murphy's house pitching him triplets with Arnold Schwarzenegger talking about the comic strip, and he is mad because the president, who is Donald Trump, is attacking him on Twitter. I was like, what is my life?
And then did you pitch to Eddie?
Yeah, we pitched it to him and he was laughing and he was like really into it. And then he was like, look, man, you guys seem real funny. And Arnold, I love Arnold. I want to do a movie with him. So, you know, send me the script. If it's funny, we'll do it. And then it was just that classic, like, we rewrote the movie 100 times and then nothing ever sort of came to it.
Huh.
But it was a great story.
Yeah.
And I got to meet Eddie Murphy. And then I saw Chris Rock at the, when he did his last tour, I went and saw him. And then in front of me was Eddie Murphy. So I was like, should I say something? You know, I don't want to say.
Because it's risk. What if he's like, who are you?
Right.
Yeah.
So then, but then we got up at the same time. We were exiting and I was like, just right next to him. And I was like, Eddie. And like 3 security guards sort of grabbed me. And I was like, it's Dan, triplets. And he's like, oh yeah, man. Where's that script? And I'm like, I don't know. Great seeing you. It was equivalent to me seeing you at the Gershwin Hotel.
Yeah. Where's that script?
Where's that script?
As you're being escorted?
Yeah, as I'm getting sent to like, you know.
Oh, man. That's great, man.
Yeah.
That's good stories. So when does, you know, the show go on?
It comes out February 6th.
I guess we're doing this in conjunction with that.
Right, yeah.
This is to promote it.
We're promoting it. We promoted it so much.
Is it funny?
It's actually... Like, I'm honestly, it's funny. Because here's the thing. I felt like everyone is funny on the show.
Well, yeah.
And I feel like that's sort of the key to, like, multicam success. It's like, it's got, the cast is so good.
And who's your guy, who's writing it?
Me. And,
Who's in the room?
Who's in the room? Hell yeah. Dan Mintz is there. Teresa Mulligan is there. Annie Mebbin's there. Rupinder Gill is there.
Yeah.
Stephanie Amante Ritter, Jean Cross is there. My wife Rachel is in the room with Audrey, Annie Mebbin, David Garacio.
It's a big room.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people were consultants. I'm sure a lot of people out there are going to be like, you forgot me. But
I was there. I'm the assistant.
I was there.
I'm the writer's assistant.
I'm there. Oh, yeah. Joe Feldman, writer's assistant. Clay, writer's assistant. But yeah, we had a good, a great, it was, you know, mostly.
And you're
mostly
running
women.
It?
I'm running it.
You're the showrunner.
I'm the showrunner.
This is the first time you've done that?
Yeah. It's so intense because all the other jobs, I was just like, you know, I was the good friend of the creator who they trusted, and I would like, you know, work with them and, you know,
and
pitch jokes. Yeah,
and
Whitney and then Mulaney too.
Yeah.
Write, you know, write jokes with him. We'd work all the weekends on him and stuff. But when I was in the Goldbergs, it was like, I'd show up and pitch a bunch of jokes and be like, all right, guys, and then write a script and then go home and like, you know, it'd be nighttime and I'd just do my own thing. And then I'd leave, you know. Now, as the showrunner, it's like, oh, like, I have to think about everything always. And I'm just, like, not sleeping and losing my mind and kind of realizing why people go crazy.
Right. But,
yeah.
but you don't have to be the crazy showrunner who makes everyone else crazy.
No. No, I try not to because, you know, it's not great.
Yeah. But if it works, you're fucking set.
Yeah. I mean, hopefully. It's so different now. I mean, I get, if it really works, it'd be great.
Yeah.
But, you know, it also could be, you know, I'm also very
good
aware.
Season.
Yeah,
good
it could be like a good season, everyone. They're going to air 1.5 episodes. But good news, they're going to stream the season special on Peacock. Okay, cool. Well, there's a win.
Yeah.
Got to be positive.
That's funny. It's like, that's like the other joke, the other doctor's joke. It's like, hey, everybody, good news. It came out great. They're going to air 1.5 episodes, but. On bigger news, my Seesaw special is going to be on Peacock. We don't know what's going to happen with these things, but it's like the joke with the good news, bad news.
Yeah.
Do you go to the doctor's office? There's good news and bad news. What do you want first? The bad news. And he's like, you have cancer. Well, what's the good news? You see that secretary up front? I'm fucking her. That was the joke I was kind of modeling after. Had you heard that before?
Yeah.
Of course. Right?
Yeah, come on. for all the jokes.
All right, well, good. So now everything's queer. We're okay.
We're okay. Are we good?
Yeah, we're good. Now, do you go to work now? What day?
Yeah,
is it?
I gotta go.
Monday.
It's Monday. It's Monday.
And you go to where? At CBS or
I
NBC?
Go to, I go to in post. I'm just going to the Sherman Oaks. Just do some editing. I'm just editing now.
That's
so,
it. It's yeah. done. It's where done. Was the soundstage at?
Sony.
Sony in Culver City.
Yeah. Stage 28 so far.
Okay. So hopefully everything will work out. Say hi to everybody for me.
I will.
Thank you, buddy.
Thank you.
That was fun. I got some laughs. I enjoyed talking to that fella, that young fella. His show, Indebted, is NBC tonight. It's a funny comedy series. It premieres tonight, February 6th. 9:30, 8:30 Central. You can go to WTFpod.com/tour for venue and ticket information for all my winter tour dates that are coming up. Me and Dean.
Oh, yeah, man.
All right. I can't play the guitar because I haven't moved that shit down to the new studio. I hope it sounds okay. It's going to sound a little better when I get some. I'm going to put a little foam on the ceiling. Got to get some foam on the ceiling. Boomer lives.
Robinhood bietet Ihnen Zugang zum US-Aktienmarkt. Sie können Krypto zu niedrigen Kosten kaufen und verkaufen. Alles an einem Ort. Auf Robinhood. Investment- und Kryptowertedienstleistungen für EU-Kunden werden von der Robinhood Europe UAB angeboten, die von der Zentralbank Litauens als Finanzmakler und Kryptowertedienstleister zugelassen ist und deren Aufsicht unterliegt. Termingeschäfte auf US-Aktien und ETF-Token bergen ein erhebliches Risiko und sind nicht für alle Anleger geeignet. Bitte überlegen Sie sich sorgfältig, ob Investments in derartige Finanzinstrumente mit Blick auf Ihre Erfahrung, Risikotoleranz und Finanzlage für Sie geeignet sind. Beachten Sie die geltenden Beschränkungen und Zulassungsvoraussetzungen.